United Kingdom radio program. Tonight is August the 29th, 2019. Foremost in the news has to be the world watching with horror at the Chinese Communist government's threats to Hong Kong and the brave men and women of Hong Kong standing up for freedom. The name of our program tonight is Hong Kong Warning Bell for Liberty.
Yes, as co-host of a cutting-edge Christian news program in America, Lou Caverly and I, Elizabeth Cubitt Caverly, realize that big tech social media giants like Google, Facebook, Apple have all targeted and deplatformed patriots and conservative Christians, some temporarily, such as Dr. Franklin Graham, and others long term. Yet none of this threat to date to our First Amendment and Second Amendment rights during this God-protected Trump years even holds a candle to the belligerent ethos and actions of mainland communist China.
The picture worth a thousand words in Time magazine's The Brief, September 2nd to 9th issue, has to be the long train of Chinese armored vehicles and troop trucks. These were massing on August 16th in Shenzhen, across the border from Hong Kong. This is the ringing of a scary alarm. InfoWars also claims that pre-invasion facilitators have been covertly put into place in some positions of power to effect tyranny's control when and if action starts.
National Security Advisor John Bolton warned the Chinese in an August 15th interview that Chinese leaders, quote, have to look very carefully at the steps they take because people in America remember Tiananmen Square. Of course, the year was 1989 when Chinese demonstrators stood up for freedom and were brutally taken down. An August 14th statement from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's domain, the State Department, stated its concern about the red flag Hong Kong situation. Quote, we condemn violence and urge all sides to exercise restraint, but remain staunch in our support for freedom of expression and freedom of peaceful assembly in Hong Kong.
President Trump's earlier statement, August 1st, quote, that's between Hong Kong and that's between China because Hong Kong is part of China, unquote, we think was a wise America First declaration. But the entire world is watching, perhaps for the first time realizing the bellicose intentions of communist China, the behemoth, no doubt high on the list of the things supported by Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, and the other Marxist Democrats. Earlier this summer, we reported on the Chi-Com social credit score, soon to be coming worldwide if the NWO world planners have their way. A credit score based on utter devotion of the citizens to the state, with no lapses in tyranny. Thought transformation camps are coming to China. We have this from August 9th, 2019. China's thought transformation camps. The following is excerpted from BBC report shows disturbing nature. The stream, July 1st, 2019. Adorned with bright smiles and clothed in colorful garb, Uyghur Muslims held in political re-education camps flash across the screen as they sing and dance triumphantly to the words of President Xi Jinping wrote just for them. These sites, captured by the BBC, are what the Chinese government wants journalists in the outside world to see. No amount of colorful displays of political allegiance, however, can hide the reality. Not one of these people is in a political re-education facility of their own accord. One interchange in the video is especially telling. The BBC reporter asked one of the men whether it was his choice to be in a political re-education facility. Yes, he replies. A policeman at my village told me to get enrolled in the school and transform my thoughts. The reporter also speaks to Chinese officials. Nearly everyone alludes to the notion that the roughly 800,000 to 1 million people interned in Xinjiang are affected by religious extremism and in need of re-education so that their thinking aligns with the Chinese Communist Party. The conflation of religion with extremism took shape in new regulations instituted in February of last year. These regulations continue the government's practice of Sinicizing, in quotes, or secularizing religion, so that it conforms to the co-tenets or the core tenets of the Communist Party. In addition to, quote, thought transformation, unquote, people in these facilities must undergo Mandarin lessons, self-criticism sessions, forced labor, and even torture. Occasionally, there are deaths. The BBC reporter notes up front that the facilities they were permitted to visit were cleaned up for journalists' prying eyes. Satellite images show that prior to the BBC's visit, watchtowers and barbed wire were removed from the premises, and barren outdoor spaces were transformed into sports facilities. Documentaries like this one are incredibly important to building a human rights case against the Chinese government. They provide additional evidence, especially of what the Chinese government wants the outside world to see. Such evidence augments the troves of satellite imagery collected over the last several years and eyewitness testimony of former prisoners who can testify that these facilities are far from benign. The existence of these facilities and the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people arbitrarily detained within their walls is now irrefutable.
That's quite a report, Lou.
Yes.
And what are things really like to live in a labor camp on the mainland? Hey, Bernie, what about these labor camps? Are they great or what? This following article is excerpted from She Survived China's Forced Labor Camp. Now she's urging Americans to reject socialism, the stream, July 8, 2019. Jennifer Zhang grew up admiring the Communist Party of China and adhering to its stringent rules, but her life changed forever when she embraced religion and was swept up in a government crackdown on Falun Gong. Arrested four times as a young adult and held in as a prisoner in a labor camp, she quickly woke up to the horrors of living in a socialist state. After being subject to brutal torture, Zhang managed to escape China and now tells about the evils of socialism and communism. At a time when more Americans are embracing Karl Marx's teachings, Chris Wright has helped Zhang share her story as part of a network called the Anti-Communism Action Team. They recently spoke to the Daily Signal, along with Darian Diachok, who escaped from the Soviet-era Ukraine as an infant and has helped former Soviet satellite states democratize and overcome their failed communist systems. Jennifer Zhang, I was arrested, like you said, four times, and sent to the Beijing female labor camp for practicing a spiritual practice called Falun Gong. It is a spiritual practice based on truth, compassion, forbearance, and plus five sets of gentle exercises, including meditation. Because it's very obvious health benefit, within 7 years, there were more Falun Gong practitioners in China than Communist Party members. At that stage, in 1999, the party decided to crack down on it. So I ended up in the Beijing female labor camp. The first day was feeling like going directly into the hell. For the first moment, we were forced to squat under the baking sun for 15 hours. And whenever someone couldn't endure it and fainted away, they were shocked by electric batons so that they could wake up. Every day in the camp, it was a battle between life and death. While I was in the camp, apart from torture every day, apart from hard, forced labor, we were also given repeated physical checkups so that if anyone needed an organ, we could be killed on demand if we were a match. Fortunately, I told the doctor I had hepatitis C before I practiced Falun Gong. I was able to be exempted from becoming a victim of organ harvesting. The torture I experienced and I saw was beyond description.
And here's another little vignette from Marxism in our own hemisphere. Christian father and mother imprisoned.
Not as horrifying as the last one, but still, we'd better be watching these parables for Americans who are getting insanely and adolescently caught up with Marxism.
That's right. The following is excerpted from Christian Father in Breitbart, May 20th, 2019. A Cuban evangelical pastor sentenced to 2 years in prison for homeschooling his children says his family has endured psychological pressure and a war on behalf of authorities for refusing to allow the Castro regime to indoctrinate his children into communist ideology. His remarks form part of a petition to the Organization of American States, the OAS, for a precautionary measure protecting Rigel and his wife, Ada Esposito, who was sentenced to 1.5 years in prison for the same crime of acts contrary to the normal development of a minor, that's in quotes. Homeschooling is illegal in Cuba, and legal schools are of notoriously low quality, prioritizing the development of submissive citizens over life and professional skills. The Homeschool Legal Defense Association, HSLDA, a nonprofit advocacy group defending the right to homeschool, and the Global Liberty Alliance, a legal defense fund dedicated to defending the defenders and advancing justice in places such as communist Cuba, filed a petition for a precautionary measure on behalf of the Rigel family. Quote, "There are no guarantees of due process or a state of rights in Cuba, and therefore there are no legal or other avenues that allow for denouncing crimes, because the courts, as well as the police and all other authorities, are under the control of the Communist Party of Cuba, the PCC. The application reads, "The couple's two children, Ruth and Joel, have been forced to matriculate at their local government school in Guantanamo. Cuba, a nominally Marxist atheist state, has consistently moved to repress the religious rights of its citizens. According to the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which publishes an annual global report on religious persecution, Cubans regularly face harassment campaigns targeting religious leaders and activists who advocated for stronger religious freedom protections. While it is difficult to track these cases, one organization reported that 194 individuals were imprisoned or detained because of their religious beliefs and activities between July 2017 and April 2018. And that quote is from its annual report for 2019.
And, Lou, tyranny comes in steps. And, of course, here in the United States, many Americans are oblivious to the deep state or the new world order, the globalists, who are promoting the green climate change and going to, if these Democrats would get in, take away all airplanes, take away cows, all of this absurdity. But you read a key thing in that other article about Cuba, that the goal was to develop submissive citizens. And so anything to weaken the middle class, this sounds like a silly thing for me to bring up. But if you listeners enjoy this program, by the way, and you would like to help us stay on the air, no commercials, and we're really giving you the straight news from a Christian viewpoint, you can write to us, send a little cash, write a check to WWCR. We can't take personal checks. Or you could send a money order to WWCR. You can send it to Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and that's Lou, capital L-O-U, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, as in the Bible, capital B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 21609. Again, that is P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. This summer, I had a washer that wore out, and we had been so pleased. About 4 years ago, Lou went to our local Sears appliance store, and he bought a new washer. But he came home and he juggled a bunch of dials, and of course we're always looking to economize so we can stay on the radio. And when he juggled the dials, we got the darn thing to work again. So it's been floating along, and we've been juggling the dials, doing all this for 4 more years. So I was really pleased. Look at the money we saved. I almost think now it had been better had Lou just bought that other washer, and we would pray that it might last 12 to 14 years, because this summer when he went to buy it, the only one that would fit in it to our kitchen had no agitator. Now, this is sort of a newfangled deal. You know, the clothes just revolve around. There's no agitator, and you can't fill it with enough water to cover them. Ours does have a deluxe setting in which we can put extra soil, extra water. And believe me, we're doing that to every load. But the first time the clothes came out, I noticed they were dirty. The towels smelled a little bit like sweat, like body odor, and the tablecloth smelled like rotten eggs. And I thought, oh, I'm just so disgusted with this. We began to meet other people who had gotten the same types of washers. One was a restaurant waitress, an older woman, maybe in her 50s, and she talked about how hers was so bad that in men's jeans, in the creases, the dirt piled up there. You know, it came out of the washer with the dirt in the crease. And so now I've just had a little note from a longtime friend, and she said I was complaining, you see, to her a little bit about this washer, and she wrote that she had to buy the same type of thing, and the water won't cover it, and the lid locks so you can't put water in. And she said, oh, well, I guess modern progress. You see, this is the viewpoint of maybe 70% of Americans who are still asleep. Maybe not that many anymore, because a lot of people are waking up in these Trump years. They do realize. We talked to another person who installed our new air conditioner, and he wanted to go in the mission field. And when I brought up what we were talking about on air about the drag queens, he said, in the libraries. And we thought, God bless you, you're awake. Now, our point is that the deep state, the powers of Lucifer at the very top, are social engineering all of us, you see, making it harder and harder and harder for the middle class to even stay clean. Wouldn't it be nice if we got a lot of germs and we perished? This is a small thing at this point, but you know, if we don't wake up with the small things, when the big things come, when we're in the labor camp and they're taking our organs, what will we do? So it's so important that you tell others about this program. And we've had NWO interference, we think, with our archives. We didn't realize nobody could get to them going back to July 5th. And we've had a lot of important spiritual programs about these drag queens and much more all summer. So now go to DividedKingdomRadio.com and visit our archives. Tell others about our program. If you have any pastors who aren't all swept up in the pre-tribulation rapture euphoria, tell them to go to our archives at DividedKingdomRadio.com. And you know that we can be heard on wonderful WWCR shortwave Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern on 4.840 megahertz, or click on transmitter 3 at WWCR.com. We can be heard again on 7.490 megahertz on Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on WWCR. We can be heard on Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net. Go visit their website. We're heard there on Monday evenings at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m. And now our newest venue is KStarTalkRadio.com. You'll want to visit KStarTalkRadio.com to this network. It's KStar Talk Radio Network, and here is the exact website, www.KStarTalkRadio.com. Again, that's KStarTalkRadio.com. And you can download an app to hear the programs. We're on at 5 p.m. Saturday evening, and at 10 a.m. Sunday, our same program is on there at KStar Talk Radio. And if you have a telephone that you can use, and of course you may have to pay some charges, you can have unlimited listen-only line available, and that line is dial 1-605-562-5330. Again, that is 1-605-562-5330. We want to really thank a listener who just this last week sent us $200, and we desperately needed to get our trash permit. It's for a year. It was $100. We also had another very serious need, and it helped us because we couldn't have really paid the radio work right this time without that help. So So little contributions or big contributions, we thank you very much for them. And now we're getting back to this topic of this growing tyranny. And Lou mentioned the China social credit system. And we have to really get back into that. It's so important because if the Democrats have their way with socialism and Marxism in America, Christians warned of the mark of the beast would do well to think about the ramifications here. And, of course, this was from Breitbart, May 14th of this year. China's social credit system. China's state-run newspaper, Global Times, revealed in a column defending the nation's authoritarian social credit system Monday. And, Lou, I want to interrupt it. I want you to take care of that young person who is helping us. Go ahead and give him that. Are you there, Lou? I think Lou is not there at the moment, but I will tell him. We have somebody mowing our lawn, and I think he must be paid when Lou gets back to the mic. Okay, anyway, this column, the Global Times, revealed in this column defending the nation's authoritarian social credit system that the communist regime had blacklisted 13.49 million Chinese citizens for being untrustworthy. Did you hear that? Even though China has maybe, I don't really know whether it's a billion people, but 13.49 million, that's not peanuts. The article did not specify what these individuals did to find themselves on the list, though the regime has revealed the system assigns a numerical score to every Chinese citizen based on how much the Communist Party approves of his or her behavior. Anything from jaywalking and walking a dog without a leash to criticizing the government on the internet to more serious, violent, and corrupt crimes can hurt a person's score. Now, we see that scale. Lou, you're back, aren't you?
Yes.
I want you to go pay the young man who is mowing our lawn.
Okay, I will do that.
We need to take care of him, too.
Yep.
And when we're talking about the middle class, Time Magazine, I don't really like a lot of their globalist emphasis, but they did have an interesting article, a worthwhile article, on people like waitresses and waiters who have to rely on tips, hairdressers, and I didn't even realize that the federal minimum wage is so low. It's $2 and something, maybe it's $2.13. So these people are always struggling. And nobody is entirely sure what the answer is because to make a big maximum minimum wage requirement can knock out a lot of small business owners. But I believe, as a former teacher, English and reading, I think the answer is to encourage all of the youth you know to get as much education as they can. In fact, we talked with a waitress. I urged her to become an elementary school teacher because she has the right personality, the children will love her, and I said, this way you will not be at the mercy of waitressing forever. Because, you know, we all have to think about what if we would lose our health? What if a waitress didn't stay strong or a waiter? It's much better to have education that can lead to a better job because there are still some better jobs. Of course, there are. So now, here we're back to this social credit system in which these people who necessarily criticize the government, if they had any kind of life spirit left, they had to at least oppose what it was doing, maybe not so vocally, but you see what happens? Then their score is knocked down. And the article says, the consequences of a low credit score vary, but most commonly appear to be travel restrictions at the moment. Now, could we apply that to America? Why, certainly we could. There might be something at each state. There would be a barrier, and there would be something there, and you'd have to have certain why we're back to citizen your papers, aren't we? My word, can we really imagine the way we're headed? Now, China is set to complete the implementation of this system in the country in 2020. As the date approaches, the government's propaganda arms have escalated its promotion as necessary to live in a civilized society. As of March, 13.49 million individuals have been classified as untrustworthy and rejected access to 20.47 million plane tickets and 5.71 million high-speed train tickets for being dishonest. the Global Times reported, citing the government's National Development and Reform Commission. Among the new examples the newspaper highlights as dishonest behavior are failing to pay municipal parking fees, eating on the train, changing jobs with, quote, malicious intent. In addition to limited access to travel, another punishment the Chinese government rolled out in March was the use of an embarrassing ringtone. We talked about this before, Lou, where individuals are maybe at a party, and all of a sudden this ringtone intervenes, and it tells them that there's a low-credit person in their midst. The ringtone would tell, and remember, you reminded me that there were some people on the left in our country who wanted to do this to people who worked for ICE at their churches and places.
Right.
So we can see this whole thing is applicable. We're not that far away from not being in Kansas anymore. So this ringtone would tell these people to be careful in their business dealings with them. And in this system, all public behavior, the Global Times explained, will be divided into administrative affairs, commercial activities, social behavior, and the judicial system. Once the system is complete, no action will be too small to impact the score. You know, if I would get down into my kitchen and I would take a hammer and I would break up that washer, someday I might be arrested. I won't be today, and I'm not that stupid. I'll work around it, and I'll have clothes that are 80% clean. But you see what we're saying? Your everyday lives will be impacted. You will not keep this thing from the gate, will you? No, Lou, they can't keep it. If you don't speak out now, if you don't tell others about programs like this, if you don't help us stay on the air, and if you don't tell them to go to our website, I don't think 10 years from now it's going to be too good. And using the nominally private corporation ZTE, the article says, China sold a version of its credit system to socialist dictator Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. The system would reportedly work through the already established Fatherland card. And we laughed about this because we had a cartoon character on the Divided Kingdom back in the Bush years, Fatherland Security. And this ration card would distribute food and medicine to Maduro's supporters. Anyone who indicated opposition to the regime put their food supply at risk. I believe this is an early harbinger of the mark of the beast. So the article concludes that with this ZTE technology, the Fatherland card can track the purchases in real-time locations of any Venezuelan. There's so much more, isn't there, Lou?
Oh, yes.
Oh, and, you know, also, we've got to bring it here to America before I turn it back to you. Yep. LifeSite News, banned from Apple News. We're now getting somewhat into the big tech giants, and this is very important. July 31st, 2019, from LifeSiteNews.com. Apple News bans LifeSite. A little over 1 week ago, Apple approved LifeSite News' application to publish our news on their Apple News platform. Today, without warning, Apple News abruptly reversed course, telling LifeSite that they had deleted our channel and all of our content from their platform. Apple claimed that LifeSite's channel didn't comply with our Apple News guidelines. Specifically, they stated that LifeSite's channel content shows intolerance towards a specific group. We don't know yet the reason for Apple's decision to delete our channel, said LifeSite News Editor-in-Chief John Henry Weston. However, at a time when there is growing evidence that tech juggernauts are engaging in concerted censorship against even mainstream conservative viewpoints, Apple's decision, made unilaterally and without opportunity to appeal, is frightening. It goes without saying that LifeSite would never promote intolerance or hatred against any group. However, in our current divisive political climate, even mild expressions of common conservative viewpoints are often written off as de facto hatred and intolerance. We certainly hope that that is not what Apple is doing. However, we urge our readers to contact Apple and to respectfully demand that they reinstate LifeSite's channel. And Lou, pick up the story.
Well, as we can see, the Marxist faction has joined up with radical Islam, both tools of the globalists to bring in authoritarian control. Even as we broadcast, we know that the United Kingdom's Tommy Robinson, who helped expose the jihadi grooming gangs,
and that was something very unsavory. in which they took underage people and they were grooming them sexually, Lou.
Yes, that's right. Anyway, Tommy Robinson helped to expose that. He's once again imprisoned, while Julian Assange is also imprisoned. A good example of state control of the Main Street media and the mainstream media working with jihad to maintain tyranny.
It sure isn't our Main Street. We hope it isn't.
And I hope not. And a good example of that is found in the following article. Swedish media refuses to report dark skin description of 10 men who raped a woman. We're highlighting this prison planet, Paul Joseph Watson article from August 2nd, not because it once more shows the rape results of the anarchy and caused by radical Islam immigrants in Sweden. What we're noting is the Orwellian curtailing of free speech and the media complicit in enforcing tyranny of the state over the individuals. If the radical Dems, Antifa, the Institute for Policy, and so on have their way in the USA, America will, that is, the American Free Press, will be no more. After police issued an alert for 10 dark-skinned men wanted for the rape of a woman in Sweden, numerous Swedish media outlets refused to report the appearance of the suspects. Last week, a woman was gang-raped in central Pattaya in northern Sweden. She described the perpetrators as dark-haired and dark-skinned. The police subsequently released this information because they wanted tips from the public that would lead to the arrest of the culprits. However, in media reports about the rape, news outlets deliberately omitted the description of the suspects, presumably, this is Sweden after all, over concerns about political correctness. Here we have a quote from Voice of Europe. Afton, Bladet, Expressen, Dagens Nyheter, and Swedish Radio have reported on the rape, but they all leave out the physical description of
now,
the suspects.
Now, Lou, we have to interject again. What was that key phrase? The submission of the people. You see, in normal countries, in normal times, of course, you'd put out the description of a suspect, wouldn't you?
Well, of course. How do you expect people to contribute to the capture of the suspects if they have no idea what they look like?
And,
common sense.
You know, this issue is of such importance. We may not finish this program tonight. You may have to tune in for part two because we have a lot to say about the Marxism and about the tyranny and all of it. It's so important because, you know, if we lose our freedom, we aren't going to be able to do anything else, are we?
Definitely not.
No. Continue.
Yes, the chief inspector, Aaron Backman, suggested that the police had been completely transparent and that any failure to report on the physical appearance of the suspects was the fault of the media. Said Backman, quote, "We have released the information that the victim has provided. It is not as if we have held back on the description." And Backman added, "The media should share the descriptions of the suspects to increase the chances of them being arrested." Just as I said earlier, I think that's just common sense. This is yet another example, and I'm back to my article, another example of how political correctness is putting people at risk and preventing criminals from being arrested, in a similar vein to how Muslim grooming gang members in the United Kingdom were not aggressively prosecuted for over a decade. Elizabeth?
And back to Google. We have to always be looking at these big tech giants. This comes from the dailywire.com. Rather, I guess the website is dailywire.com, June 25th, 2019. YouTube pulls Project Veritas video on Google bias. A new Project Veritas video that includes testimony from a whistleblower, leaked internal documents, and undercover footage of a Google employee discussing how the company is working to prevent the next Trump situation, and it has been pulled by YouTube, a platform owned by Google, due to a privacy claim by a third party. This is the second Project Veritas big tech expose video taken down by the platform in 2 weeks. The video features clips of Project Veritas undercover reporters' secretly recorded discussion with Jen Janai, head of Google's Responsible Innovation Team, which monitors the responsible implementation of AI technologies. And, of course, we realize that's artificial intelligence technologies in a restaurant in San Francisco. Another clip shows her discussing Google's attempt to prevent another 2016. Quote, Elizabeth Warren is saying we should break up Google, she says. And like, I love her, but she's very misguided. Like, that will not make it better. It will make it worse because all these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that. We all got screwed over in 2016. Again, it wasn't just us. It was the people got screwed over. The news media got screwed over. Like, everybody got screwed over. So we're rapidly been like, what happened there and how do we prevent it from happening again? She says in another clip, we're also training our algorithms like, if 2016 happened again, would the outcome be different? As a former English teacher, this is a true nightmare. This is a nightmare with this woman's illiterate speech with like. Back to the article. 2 weeks ago, YouTube pulled another big tech expose video published by Project Veritas, likewise citing a privacy complaint. That video focused on alleged anti-conservative bias within Pinterest. The established media and technology are so afraid of investigative journalism, they need to censor it, O'Keefe tweeted in response. And I believe I have more on that Pinterest issue. This is from, again, ProjectVeritas.com, June 11, 2019, Tech Insider Blows Whistle. Project Veritas has received and published documents from an insider at Pinterest. The documents, which include product code, Slack messages, and internal policies, reveal terms and websites that Pinterest apparently censors. In an interview, the Pinterest insider who leaked the documents explains how the company censors pro-life and Christian content on the website. Said Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe, the documents we obtained raise questions about whether or not these tech companies really operate like neutral platforms as opposed to publishers with editorial agendas. Pinterest is a publicly traded social media company headquartered in San Francisco that has nearly 300 million active monthly users. In the past, Project Veritas released undercover footage of Twitter employees discussing shadow banning and also published leaked documents from Facebook which revealed plans to target and demote conservative commentary. I was pretty surprised, said the Pinterest insider in an interview when she discovered that pro-life group LiveAction.org was added to a porn domain block list. Oh, Lou, how Orwellian is that?
Yep. Good is evil. Evil is good.
And it's not too much different from that Virginia governor, is it, Northam?
No.
I mean, he's going to put the live babies into the category with dead babies. So we've got to get the pro-life group into the porn domain block list. The insider explained that the block list was intended to be a collection of pornographic websites that Pinterest uses in order to ensure that pornography cannot be posted. LiveAction.org is not a pornographic website. It is the web domain of a prominent pro-life advocacy group. The insider explained that websites on a domain block list cannot be linked in posts made by users. While investigating, we have a new word. It's not submission, it's suppression, isn't it?
Yes, that fits.
Absolutely. So Project Veritas tried to post the liveaction.org link on Pinterest and failed to do so, receiving an error message that read, "Sorry, your request could not be completed." Lila Rose, the founder and president of Live Action, claims that her organization has been censored in the past and believes that pro-life organizations are unfairly targeted by social media companies. Pinterest says that their mission is to, quote, help empower people to discover things that they love, end of quote. But despite the fact that millions of people love babies and a pro-life cause, they are secretly censoring our life-affirming messages. Pinterest users deserve to know the truth, and our messages deserve to be treated fairly. Project Veritas reviewed the sensitive terms list and discovered that Christianity-related terms like Christian Easter and Bible verses were marked as brand unsafe. If you are a Bible-believing Christian and you are hearing this, this is a warning. Perhaps it will take a decade. Perhaps it will take two decades. But persecution is coming to this country. That is my prediction, Elizabeth Covett Caverly. And it doesn't take a genius to know that. We can see the harbingers of things to come. The insider explained to Project Veritas that in addition to removing content it wants to censor, Pinterest also hides materials from users on their home screens and search results. Oh, isn't that clever, Lou?
Yeah.
I mean, we're as babyish as a little third grader. I think of when I taught first grade one year, and this one little kid came and said to me, "Miss Covett, can I go to the bathroom? Because I've already heard that story three times." You know, that was a funny little story. And we always have the little tattletales, and we always have the copiers. If one kid tells a story and he gets a lot of acclaim from his classmates, then the next three would tell stories that were just similar. They were alike. The social engineers know that if they can get everybody on the bandwagon, that's a propaganda technique. They've developed it from our failed human nature, our flawed human nature, but we have a lot of godly attributes, too, that we can call on when we are saved. So, at any rate, we see this childish, evil, malignant aspect here to hide the materials from the users on their home screens. Is it any wonder I won't have the Internet in my home? No, it isn't. And search results, that they hide them. The insider added that there is also silent removing, which means the content is removed, but there is no notice to the account who posted the material. Or I didn't read that right. There's no notice to the account who posted the material that it was removed. Oh, now we've got another word, Lou, stealth.
That's right. That's right.
Let's move right on. There's more, isn't there?
Oh, there is. There's lots more. Maybe some of you out there are yawning. Oh, well, we'll still get our guns. The NRA will save us. Just kick back and enjoy the end of summer. Well, maybe not. We've always heard that GOA, Gun Owners of America, was truer, bluer, and then it seemed the NRA got re-encouraged, maybe by the GOA itself. But Elizabeth and I well recall the late Dr. Stan Montease world weary statement, quote, "I found almost every conservative organization was infiltrated," unquote. Here are excerpts from a columnist David Harsanyi's very interesting NRA history in his our column of August 18th, 2019. If it wants to survive, NRA needs to change. In the mid-1970s, the NRA had to make a choice. As crime continued to spike across the nation, and politicians increasingly embraced gun control measures, an internal debate broke out about the future of the organization. Initially, the NRA's more passionate Second Amendment advocates were purged. NRA leadership would fire more than 70 activists, during the early part of the decade. By 1976, the organization's board decided to relocate its headquarters from Washington, D.C. to Colorado to extract itself from political debate. It wasn't until a 1977 NRA convention in Cincinnati that politically minded members pulled off something of a coup, wresting the organization from the non-political wing. Many of today's gun control advocates like to claim the, quote, "Cincinnati Revolt," unquote, was the moment extremists took over the organization, undermining average gun owners who were merely interested in hunting and skeet shooting, which is, needless to say, a simplistic understanding of both the NRA's history and gun owners. The gun control debate has changed, and the NRA changed with it. And the more gun controllers pushed, the more popular the NRA became, doubling its membership from 1977 to 1983. With every concerted effort to enact gun restrictions, the organization grew. What is the point of the NRA now? Is it to be one of the 1,000 partisan outfits in D.C., helping elect Republicans? Or is it to make compelling and effective arguments about the virtues and necessity of the Second Amendment? For someone looking in from the outside, it seems the past few years have been mostly about the former. Of course, we shouldn't forget the NRA runs an array of programs around the country that cultivate responsible gun owners. And it isn't the group's fault as a policy matter that firearms have become predominantly a partisan issue. Young voters might not be aware that the NRA once regularly supported pro-gun Democrats such as Harry Reid and Bernie Sanders. It's the left's embrace of confiscatory policies and intrusions that often makes bipartisan support untenable. The NRA is compelled to back Republicans because Republicans and the judges they nominate and confirm are far more prone to protect gun rights. The problem with being a partisan outfit, however, is that you soon start working for the party rather than the party asking to, that is the rather than asking the party to help you. After the Las Vegas mass shooting that killed 58 people, the deadliest in U.S. history, the Trump administration unilaterally banned bump stocks through executive action. You can imagine that had the Obama administration engaged in a precedent-setting intrusion into gun rights, banning an accessory by fiat rather than legislatively, the NRA would rightly have raised hell about the dictatorial powers of the presidency. In this case, the best pushback the organization could muster was that it was, quote-unquote, disappointed. Today, Republicans talk about universal background checks and red flag laws that could strip gun owners of their due process rights. And the NRA isn't offering persuasive arguments about why they're bad ideas. Are they even part of the conversation in any meaningful way? It's difficult to tell. These days, the NRA, it seems, is just a convenient punching bag for Democrats who are too cowardly to go after tens of millions of gun owners. Another problem with being aggressively partisan is that the NRA turns off millions of Americans who might be open to its cause but aren't politically involved. In the past few years, the NRA leadership handed the keys and a ton of cash to the public relations firm Ackerman McQueen, which in turn seemed to believe the NRA should be another Fox News rather than a civil rights organization. Now the two are mired in countersuits. Should the NRA strive to involve itself in every contemporary debate, creating antagonism on issues that have absolutely nothing to do with gun rights? Though I'm no public relations expert, it seems to me that the mission of any issue-oriented organization should be to proselytize rather than alienate. On top of all this, a nasty and convoluted internal fight has broken out among the board members and NRA head Wayne LaPierre, none of which has anything to do with the future of gun rights, but rather personal animosity and greed. It's unlikely that most members are very interested in the disputed specifics of the kerfuffle, but it all spilled into public view when then-President Oliver North alleged that the NRA was spending nearly $100,000 a day on lawyers. The NRA's top lobbyist, Christopher Cox, would also resign after being accused of plotting to push out LaPierre. Apparently, the NRA head had spent about $540,000 on clothing and travel expenses that had been laundered through Ackerman. This week, we learned via the Wall Street Journal that the NRA had signed a document agreeing to purchase 99% of a company that was formed for the sole purpose of buying LaPierre a $6 million mansion in Dallas. For whatever reason, the deal was never consummated. Why should any gun owner or Second Amendment advocate send money to an organization that is increasingly ineffective on policy, though highly effective at keeping a few people rich? Perhaps longtime members keep re-upping with the NRA, but how many younger Americans are becoming members? If the NRA wants to be as powerful as Democrats claim it is, it's going to have to change again. That was by David Hassani.
That's a very important article, and it's up to the people to make these big outfits responsible. Just like Johnson & Johnson now, they have lost a lawsuit. It has been ruled against them about the opioid crisis, helping to make it part of America's tragedy out into rural areas everywhere. So, you know, we have a duty to stand in the gap, the Lord tells us. And I know now that we will have a very important program, part two, next week, continuing about the leftists and the Marxism and what it really means, what kind of tyranny threat we're under. This Hong Kong Liberty warning bell. And now here is David Harsanyi again, and this was a column in August that said, compared to Democrats, Trump is clearly moderate. Once you strip away all the hysteria and madness surrounding Donald Trump's presidency, you're left with a policy agenda of a populist, big government Republican. Whether or not you have a moral or personal case against Trump himself, the president's stated policy positions fall well within the contours of traditional right-left politics. Can the same be said of Democrats? I'm sorry, but across the board tax cuts notwithstanding, the panic-stricken reaction we saw aren't particularly radical. Every Republican president going back to Warren Harding has passed some kind of rate reduction. Nor is Trump's stated position on constrained foreign entanglement, which is popular with large factions of both parties. Trump's pro-Israel posture is a long-standing GOP position, and before President Barack Obama, it enjoyed bipartisan consensus. At CNN's primary debate in Detroit, presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg cautioned that no matter which policies Democrats embrace, Republicans will still call them crazy socialists. Until recently, there was no need for any qualifier because Democrats feigned outrage at the mere mention of socialism. But now that Democrats are openly arguing for collectivist policies, one of their leading candidates is, in fact, a socialist who could easily have been the party's nominee for the presidency in 2016, saying socialism is apparently okay. And let's face it, leading candidates such as Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders oppose free enterprise as anything but a funding mechanism for their state-run social engineering projects. They see capitalism as an evolutionary stage, if you will. At the debates, both argued for the complete mobilization of society to achieve their policy goals. Warren argued that insurance companies do not have the God-given right to suck all the money out of health care. Yet, she believes government has a God-given right to nationalize entire industries, dictate what Americans can buy and sell, and levy confiscatory taxes. I'm not sure if this qualifies as crazy socialism, but it's certainly un-American and dictatorial. Democrats want to get rid of your private health insurance, every single one of them. They aspire to do it either immediately through Medicare for All or incrementally by creating a public option that destroys your private plan by forcing it to compete against an institution that can print money. Perhaps this kind of economic populism will give socialists the traction to win an election. And maybe this kind of statism is destined to become the prevailing ideology of both parties. But stripping away the profit motive is why government-run enterprises are wasteful and bloated. Without profit, there is no incentive to improve efficiency or service or technology or anything else. So mock Trump all you like for his word salads or lack of policy knowledge, but he certainly understands this basic idea. The Green New Deal, making sure every American is guaranteed a government job if they want, that is a disaster at the ballot box. You might as well FedEx the election to Donald Trump, John Hickenlooper, another member of the Logical Coalition, warned. Warren countered Hickenlooper was recycling Republican Party talking points. She was wrong. At its center, the Green New Deal calls for elimination of all fossil fuel energy production in 20 years. The Green New Deal would also get rid of all nuclear power and 99% of cars, gut and retrofit every building in America, and offer every citizen a government-guaranteed family-sustaining wage, family and medical leave, vacations and a pension, safe, affordable, adequate housing. I want to underline that word in red ink, adequate housing. Maybe it'll be a little bungalow, 2 feet by 4 feet, I think, maybe, when we get down to where they want to put the brain chip in and have you chained to this little computer, this AI outfit of the future. But at any rate, that's just me envisioning tyranny at a worse stage. So now, Harsanyi is going on with this list, what they're promising: safe, affordable, adequate housing, and economic security for all who are unable or unwilling to work. If that's not crazy socialism, what is? Democrats are sure to walk back some of this primary bait, but judging from the debates, Trump will be the voice of policy moderation. You know, the voice of insanity, Lou, it's really getting louder and more raucous. I wonder if that was a direct quote from the Dems, that they would give economic security to all who are unable or unwilling to work. Would they actually admit that?
Well, I don't know. It sounds good to me. I don't think I would want to work if I don't have to. I think I could, you know, if they'll give me, maybe they'll give me like $50,000 a year for doing nothing.
Yes. You know, if we were 30 years younger and we were less stalwart as Christians, we'd be taken into that big room we've heard about and offer $3 million. But, you know, libertarianism versus Christianity is not going to save any of us, our eternal souls. And it makes us sad when we hear libertarianism bragging that they smoke marijuana once a year and then telling the youth not to do it. As teachers, you and I know that's the surest way to get them to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And to hear libertarian patriot figures joking and laughing about a ménage à trois. After all, I took French, and that means three people in a sexual congress. We really need a lot of prayers for these libertarian figures. A lot of good information comes from them. But if you think that it's just your guns and just your patriot love that will ever save you with what's coming, big things are coming. You know, we know that dreams are not always true, but sometimes God gives them. And it's just been interesting to us that Lou's late father, Mr. Caverly, always had dreams of Chinamen chasing him here in America. That's true, isn't it?
Oh, yes, that's true. He said it many times.
There have been other visions of China invading. But the best thing we can do is to tell others about Jesus Christ and about this program, DividedKingdomRadio.com. We're a little locomotive, but we have Jesus Christ on our side, and we're going to be faithful to him, and we let the results up to him. We hope that many will be saved and not go to eternal hell. It's been a pleasure to be with you. We love you, listeners, and we pray for you. Please pray for us and the Divided Kingdom. Good night.